As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and yes, we're here talking about your losing streak snapping Toronto Blue Jays, West Coast living Toronto Blue Jays. We do this twice a week here for The Athletic, which, of course, if you aren't a subscriber, you got to do it. Go to theathletic.com/spinrate. Subscribe to the show twice a week. Once a week, me and Caitlin McGrath, who covers the team for The Athletic, and once a week, and today included, with former Blue Jays All-Star Ricky Romero, who joins me from beautiful downtown Mississauga. Ricky, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. Holy smokes. What a series.
What a series. Wild series. Caitlin and I got a little bit out over our skis and we're saying, oh, well, the Blue Jays, they got to look to sweep. They got to look to go 5-2 in this stretch. And I don't think it was unfair to say they need to be. I'm never going to say you got to go in and sweep. I just don't think that's realistic. And you know, the best team against any team, you know, you can drop one or two. But losing two of the A's, it's and in the way that they did it is a little bit disappointing. And also, it hurts. It hurts, you know, if you're trying to stay ahead of the pack in the playoff race.
Yeah, and I guess you mentioned that if they go 5-2, it'd be a great road trip. They still have the chance to do that. So I'm not counting that out. I mean, if they go in there and do work against Seattle, it's going to be a completely different atmosphere too, Drew. Playing in Seattle in front of Canadian fans, the stadium's about 98% Toronto Blue Jay fans. So it's going to be a lot different than playing in front of 5,000, 6,000 fans that they do in Oakland. And sometimes, and I'm not saying that's an excuse, but sometimes you kind of, if it's dead like that, it's kind of hard to maybe get the adrenaline rush going, and it's going to be a complete 180 in Seattle. That's for sure.
Hey, look, the Blue Jays fans in Oakland were loud, and I think that they may have come close to 98% Blue Jays fans because there were only 4,000 people there. So all it takes is like 3,500 people, and then you're almost the whole way there. It's really a shame. What do you think? I mean, did you ever like playing in Oakland?
I did.
The fans are awesome, I think, but the stadium is just such a tragedy.
It is a shitty stadium. Shitty facilities, and that's just the way it's always been. I like pitching in the actual stadium because I always did well, and I know you're the numbers guy, so if you want to pull them up, I know some of my better road stadiums was definitely in Oakland, and I really had some good games there. I enjoyed pitching there. I enjoyed how big the stadium was, and it was one of those stadiums where you knew, hey, I'm gonna be around the zone. And anything up in the air, it's gonna die. And we saw a few balls hit by the guys. Out of all people, Matt Chapman got into a few this past series, and they went to the warning track. And you can tell he was like, "Wow!" But that's been him pretty much all season. I feel like he's on the cusp, and those ones that should be home runs are not falling for him.
The poor guy has been hitting the ball to the big part of the park a lot this year.
A lot.
But he still had a great series, and he's really swinging the bat well. Again, it's hard to be mad at just how well, just how he's performed. Again, the overall numbers aren't, you know, they don't jump off the page yet. But, you know, you and I have been saying it for weeks now. I mean, maybe the breakout, quote unquote, isn't quite there. But, I mean, he was 5 for 10 or something, but picked up a couple walks in this three-game series. He looks comfortable to play it. Again, sometimes hit it to the big part of the park, but hit it hard consistently. And, again, I mean, there was some talk about who are disappointments. Maybe you could. I think it's okay to be disappointed in his production, but for me, you know, he looks the part, and he's done. He's been exactly what the Blue Jays thought they were getting when they acquired him, and it was really good to see him. You know, have a nice weekend back there in Oakland, where you know it's a shame. You know, his first game. It was even though it was the 4th of July, A's fans are just so like numb to this. So in what could have been like a nice big comeback, they're like, oh, geez, there's another one of these. Like, we've already done Sean Manea. We don't even get to do Matt Olson this year. Like, this is breaking my heart. But, again, I it's great to see him have a great series and to really slowly show the work he's been putting in is paying off.
Yeah, no, and it's been paying off. And you mentioned the fans. Obviously, I feel like that organization is in shambles a bit. I mean, it's just, you don't know what direction they're really going in. You don't know if, I guess when you trade for all these guys and you say you're building for the future, but are you really? Like, it just, it's crazy because in the past they've been competitive and they've been like that scrappy Oakland A's team that just finds himself in that wild card game and stuff like that. But again, it was a down series for the Jays. And obviously, with the tragedy that happened this past weekend and, you know, flying all the way to the West Coast with heavy hearts. And we were talking off air with our producer Cam, and he was asking me like about Manoah. And I said, you know what? The guy has been money all season, and it sucks that his stinker came up at this point in the season, but it did. And he's a guy that's carried the rotation and been the most consistent guy all season. So you can't expect him to be every single game or every fifth day to be the guy that, hey, I'm going to go 7-8 innings, even though I'm sure he wants to, but it was just a stinker of a game. And I know a lot of people were talking about his velocity being down a little bit, but hey, it can be the long trip too, you know, the long trip, not sleeping well, all that stuff people have to take into consideration. And I'm sure he would tell you he's not making any excuses, but I know how it is on the body and, you know, when you have to change time zones like that. And again, a guy that's been so consistent all season, he deserves a bad one. He deserves a pass, I should say, on a bad one. And the crazy thing is that they were still in the game. And I mean, you know, when you're down 3-4 runs with that offense, you feel like you're still in the game.
Absolutely. And even his bad one, it wasn't as bad as the one we saw a day later. but also, speaking of tragedy, I do want to take a quick second to shout out my friend and a friend of the show, your boy, the Zoobs, who noted on Twitter today that he lost his father this week. So that's always tough, really unexpected. So everyone who listens to this show knows the Zoobs, and we all appreciate him for who he is. And so sending our thoughts to him and his new young family. Zoobs just had a baby as well. So crazy time in his and Melissa's life. And just want to send a big shout out to the Zoobs. You reminded me so that I can send it out to him. The other thing I wanted to say is Ricky Romero pitching in Oakland. Boy, pity the A's. 4 starts, only allowed 7 extra base hits in 4 starts. My guy, doing numbers in Oakland. 543 OPS allowed. He held batters to a 183 batting average. It's pretty good. You pitched well in California.
I mean, we
don't have to talk about Angel Stadium too much, but other than that, you pitched really well in California.
They should have just traded me to Oakland when they had the chance to. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know if they ever did. But yeah, I always pitch well there. Again, I use the stadium to my advantage, and which, you know, obviously you mentioned the Kikuchi start, and man, what do they do at this point, Drew? What is there to be done with him?
I don't think they had the luxury to skip him. I don't think that you can confidently go. I mean, what did Casey Lawrence manage the game decently well in his last kind of like long outing? but he still, I think what did he pitch, five innings, give up five runs, like give up two home runs. It's not great, but it's the way that it looks, right? He's throwing strikes. He's in the zone, exactly. and he's putting the ball in play, as opposed to watching Kikuchi and everybody, including the manager, who, again, Charlie Montoya, like uncharacteristically blunt about Kikuchi. Not as much of like the cheerleader, like our guys. He's just like, can't throw the ball in the fucking strike zone. Like, he's losing his mind. Because it is frustrating, and you know, as you know, nobody's more frustrated than Kikuchi himself. But I just don't think they have the luxury to skip him with Gossman. Whether or not when he might go again, you know, after taking the line drive off the ankle, going to miss his start Thursday. I just don't think that they have the luxury, which is dangerous, but.
And Gausman looked very, very, like when he was playing catch, it looked like he was not trying to put pressure on that ankle. It almost seemed like he was very gingerly walking. And that's a bad sign, obviously, that you don't want to see, because he's trying. He's going out there and trying. And the last thing you want is for him to risk another injury or anything like that. So hopefully he takes his time coming back. And going back to Kikuchi, it's easy for everyone like to shit on him, and rightfully so, right? I mean, he was brought in to be a guy, and I was asked that question, what did you expect from him? Well, you gave him $36 million. I'm expecting him to go out there and compete every fifth day. He's not a guy that just came in and say, hey, we hope he figures it out. I feel like they thought they had something in him enough to maybe break him out, and he can go out there and give you quality starts. But right now, to me, it just seems like he's guiding everything again. Like, it's like he falls in this trap where if he throws ball one, ball two, it's like he starts to kind of like not nibble, but it's like he's hoping he throws a strike. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and you can tell he was frustrated at times, because he did throw some close ones a few times. But in the big leagues, especially with big league umpires, if you're missing all over the place and then you dot one up, you're most likely not going to get it. That's just the way it is. And it's like, dude, show me that you can throw strikes and I'll start giving it to you. But if you're like ball one, ball two, up in the zone, down in the zone, everywhere, all over the place, and then all of a sudden you dot one down and away, it's like, well, you got the umpire looking all over the place that when he does get one, he's probably not going to give it to you. And you can tell he was a bit frustrated by that too. But again, to me, it's not stuff wise now. It's what's in between the ears and all the stuff that's been thrown at him. Obviously, it's a lot. And when you're trying to make adjustments from start to start, I'm sure the media, and he's hearing it all, and Pete Walker going out there in the second inning, and you can tell it was short, and I'm sure he wasn't happy. He let him know. I'm sure he's listening to what his manager's saying post game. All that stuff starts to creep in, that the last thing you want to do is fuck up. And I feel like he's going out there with. Timidly, he's going out there, and that's not what you want to have every fifth day. And he has to go out there and just I've been saying this all along, let it fly, man. Like, what do you have to lose at this point? Just go out there and just whatever game that you want to throw, because a couple games ago he brought back his cutter, and that's a pitch that the Jays had taken away. Because it stayed in the zone, and I can see why. I mean, it was flat. It's almost like just a spinning fastball that stays right down the middle. But if you can get it sharper and it works to your advantage, then go ahead and use it. Go and do whatever makes you comfortable to this point, and do it with no fear. That's the biggest thing. And it's easier said than done, because again, a lot of negative stuff has crept into his head that I feel like right now he's like, okay, what the hell do I do? And it stinks. It sucks to be in that position. And Cam, our producer, asked me, well, who does he remind you of? Or, you know, what's who, like, did you ever play with somebody like that? And I was like, it kind of happened to me a little bit in 2012, the second half. But I was pitching injured. I wasn't throwing 94, 95 like he is. Like, when he lets it go and Drew, the few outs that he got, when he lets it go, it jumps on the hitter, and the hitter, they take ugly swings off of him sometimes. And you're just like, there it is. But then, like, he goes back to nibbling and back to guiding the fastball. And that's where I'm like, it's frustrating to watch that, because it's like, dude, trust it. And it, again, easier said than done. And we're sitting here and talking about this, but it's like, I'm sure that's what Pete is telling him, trust your stuff, man. Go out there and just compete. Like, whatever work we do in between the 4 days, when you're on that mound, 60 feet, 6 inches, and it's 7 o'clock at night, go out there and do you. Like, everything else goes out the window. You know, it, let your athleticism take over, because he is an athlete. And yeah, it, to me, it's just, it's between the ears at this point, and hopefully he's able to get out of this funk.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let me ask you a question. Would you start an opener? And it starts.
No, I don't know that I would. I mean, again, I think it's, the question is, to what end? If you start an opener, is it to like take the pressure off of him, to like get him in a different routine? Maybe. I can see that. You know, I'm a bit of a believer in that, and just like try something a little bit different to maybe kind of snap you into where you're going again. And that could be as the same thing with throw a cutter. Maybe it gets your release point in a place where you're more comfortable with, even if it's not the most effective pitch, if it can pay dividends somewhere else. You know, I'm a big believer in that. If it's a matter of throwing an opener in front of him to get him in a different routine, sure, that might work. I guess my concern with the way that he's pitched, and the way that he pitched in particular this week, was that it doesn't matter if you're facing the middle of the order, the bottom of the order. You know, when you're throwing it all over the planet, you know, even the number nine hitter, like the literal white child Nick Allen up there, teeny little dude who looks like he's like 15 years old. He's got a small strike zone, big strike zone. They're not going to swing if they're not competitive pitches. And I think that's
a great point.
That's really where we are. So that's, if you're worried about these guys grinding out at bats against him, sure. If you really want to just try something different, sure. Let me ask you about something that the Blue, you know, kind of a roster question, and but also a catcher question. So Danny Jansen's on his way back. He's just currently doing a rehab assignment with Buffalo. Do you think that maybe the opportunity to throw to a different catcher might benefit Kikuchi? Is there, I mean, again, he's so new to the team and doesn't have long-standing relationships built up with these guys, but is there a chance that maybe just having Danny back there, you know, there's been a lot made about his game calling, might that be able to get Kikuchi into a different groove?
100%. I'm all for that, I've been a little bit surprised, and I know Kirk and Moreno are pretty young in that sense, but I've been surprised that it's been Moreno catching him, because you want to have a veteran guy back there. And I'm not saying Kirk is a veteran, but he's a little bit more polished than Moreno in game calling. But yeah, Danny Jansen's definitely going to help 100%. And if I'm Danny Jansen, I put my arm around Kikuchi and say, trust me, do not shake me tonight. Let's work off of me. And I feel like sometimes some of my best games came off of that, when I was struggling, and veteran guys come and put your arm around you and say, hey, don't shake me. And I think if Kikuchi does that with the Danny Jansen, a guy that's, again, polished, he knows what he wants to do, he knows the league, I think that can help big time. It's not going to hurt. At this point, like you mentioned, we're willing to try anything. But again, he has to buy in and say, Danny, I trust you. All right. Even if you might see a 1-2 pitch that you're like, what the hell is he thinking? But trust it. Conviction. No fear. Conviction, no fear. If he does that, again, he's got the stuff. He's got the stuff. And, you know, you say that, yeah, that the Blue Jays are not in any point, you know, they don't have the luxury to just say, okay, let's skip him. Let's call our number one prospect right now to make his debut, because, you know, we saw when they called up Thomas Hatch and how that went. And and the Jays are clearly in need of some depth in the pitching side, and it's showing right now. And we went from, if you listen probably to our first episode together, we went from being so excited about this rotation and the depth that was below that, you know, with Pearson and Stripling and stuff like that. You're like, man, like this has the potential of guys filling in if guys go down. Well, right now we're sitting here and saying, oh shit, like maybe the depth wasn't as good as we thought. And obviously injuries don't help.
No, injuries and underperformance are like when they come and they happen together like this, it really puts a lot of pressure on the team. And again, it would be silly to kind of blame Thomas Hatch. I'm not saying that you did, but like, where's Thomas Hatch? Like ninth on the depth chart at this point, a guy who wasn't even exactly, you know, blowing the doors off in AAA, guy who's obviously kind of like working on some stuff, and he gets pressed into duty. And then, you know, coming up with a spot start in the big leagues, and you're like, well, if I do well, maybe they'll, you know, they need me here, so maybe I can get another turn. And just, it's just not that's a tough situation to put anybody. Put anybody in, especially somebody who's been struggling in AAA. But I'm really interested to see what happens. And I really want to believe and really want to hope that Danny Jansen can have that kind of an impact. And it's interesting to hear from you. That, you know, the ability to have trust in the guy when he says, don't shake me, and then you can go and do it. I mean, some guy, I always wonder about some guys, you know, Mark Burley famously never shook anybody. Yeah. I'll ask you, I guess, are there other pitchers who are like, I have my game plan, I know what I want to throw, and are they more kind of the captains of the ship, or is it very much like come from the catcher first in your experience?
No, and it comes from the catcher and them doing their homework. I mean, it's easy to mention Doc Halliday.
Yeah.
But some of the guys that I played with, Sean Markham, a guy that knew his game, knew what he wanted to do. He didn't shake. He worked fast. Sean Markham, Brandon Morrow, another guy, you know what you were going to get, power fastball, nasty slider. Mm-hmm. And you know, the guys behind the plate took their time in doing their homework and saying, okay, just trust me. I know what I'm doing. And if you show that kind of trust, like, or that kind of like, if you come to a guy, like if a catcher came up to me, you know, Jose Molina, John Buck, those guys, if they could, hey, Rick, I got the game plan down. I've been watching tape on these guys. Stay with me tonight. Boom. I'm like, great. It makes my job easier. I don't have to sit there and watch tape on, you know, whoever it is 100 times to see where his cold zones are, what he's doing, what tendencies he has. I'm like, all right, I trust you. Let's go. Because those guys are in the video room. They're in there, you know, and I saw it plenty of times. JP was the same way. And so when you build that kind of relationship, and if Kikuchi can trust Danny to do that, and I know Danny has the ability to do that, and he has the presence of, and he can kind of lay down the authority. Cause again, you got to give Kikuchi some tough love. You can't keep coddling him around saying, oh yeah, well, we're here. Hopefully you figure it out, dude.
What you're doing isn't working, my dude. Let me help you. Let me help you. Help me help you. Don't shake.
And
you create you and pitch talks and God, that's it.
Yeah, and you start creating some confidence, and you're like, okay, like, all right, like he starts to buy in, and that can be a good thing for the Jays. And again, you're having two young catchers catch him that obviously Kikuchi wasn't here last year, so Kirk doesn't know anything about him. Moreno sure as hell doesn't know anything about him. So obviously that has a bit of an impact. Again, they're not the ones throwing the balls. Kikuchi is. So it's got to come from within him, and hopefully Danny is able to guide him. Because again, when I say I compare myself to him in the sense that when you start losing confidence, when you start losing mound presence, all that, like that's where I relate to him, because it's tough, because you're having so much stuff throwing at you and you're trying to make the changes. You're not trying to go out there and suck. You know, let's shoot that straight in. And people can say, oh yeah, you know, what is there to worry about? He's making a lot of money. Shit. If money was, you know, the source of happiness, then I'm sure a lot of people who have a lot of money would be super happy, but it really isn't, you know, because he's going out there trying to win and trying to, not this start, but the one before when he had that good outing, he came out and said, man, the best part has been that my teammates have had my back through all this. And I was like, wow, okay. Like, so it tells you, you know, that his teammates do care for him and they want to see him succeed. You know, nobody wants to go out there and suck. And that makes you feel good as a pitcher. And if your teammates are rooting for you, genuinely rooting for you and coming up to you like, man, like, hey, stay with that. You know, it just means a lot.
I can only imagine that no matter how big or small your paycheck is, when you're sitting on the bench in the dugout and you've come out of the game and it's the third inning and you're looking out there and it's, you know, you see some crooked numbers on the scoreboard and you're sitting there being like, what, like, what's going on? And you just don't even know. And you're watching your team and you're watching the nonstop string of guys come out of the bullpen. I don't think it matters how much money you get paid at that moment, that you feel like shit.
It's a shitty feeling, man, especially when you know that the bullpen's running on fumes and you're like, golly, I can't put my bullpen in this situation again. Like, it's all that stuff starts creeping in. You start looking back at the radar gun. You start looking everywhere and the tempo decreases. You have shitty tempo and you just, you know, everything just gets thrown off. And you just hope that he figures it out because, again, the stuff is there. And I know it's easy for everyone to say, like, get him out. You know, he's done. And I'm like, well, if you get him out, you're still got to pay him his money. So,
I mean. Even the idea, some people have suggested, you, seriously, and serious people have suggested maybe you send him to the minor leagues. But if you go to send him to the minor leagues, he doesn't have to accept that assignment, as I understand it. He can go. And then he's pitching for free for somebody else. So you're paying for him, but not even with the opportunity to try to like help him get right and help your ball club.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I was looking at, so as you were talking, it was interesting to me that you called out in particular Jose Molina and John Buck as guys that you threw to, because when I look at the numbers you threw, you know, they were guys that caught you more than once. They were the two guys that you had the best numbers with both of those two. Again, you know, of course you mentioned JP who you threw to more than anybody. But, you know, that Jose Molina, not just reputation, but all everything, right? Like, again, like the as good a defensive catcher as there's been, the guy who was at the forefront of all of this framing and just, and I really think that with A, he has that gravitas where if he says to you, hey, don't shake, I got you tonight, that's got to mean something.
Yeah, no, and it meant a lot. Like, again, it makes your job a little bit easier. You still obviously have to do certain adjustments because you don't know what kind of stuff you're going to have that night. But the best part for me was, like, you know, I was a guy that it took me a while to get my curveball going. But when these guys were catching me at times, it was like, we're going to throw it 0-1 second pitch of the game, you know, and it's like, oh, like, whoa, like usually you wait, kind of you pace yourself with that pitch. Nah, these guys are like, boom, get a feel for it now. Get a feel for it now. And then we back off as the middle innings come. And then we establish everything else. You know, if we can establish that fastball control in, out, change up, down, and away, boom, flip that curveball, 0-0, 0-1, triple up on it. Here you go. Stuff that you don't see, you know, very much nowadays. You don't see guys tripling up. And if they saw a bad swing on a curveball, they were calling it again. And if I got a second bad swing on a curveball, they were calling it a third time. And it was like, hey, thank you. And, you know, it even goes back, and I'm going to throw this name at you. Rod Barajas, too, was kind of the same way. You know, a guy that he was like, hey, man, trust me. You know, I got you.
Rod Barajas also, for the record, seems like, again, just watching on TV, seems like the coolest guy. Seems like the chillest, like funniest dude. He just seems like he's got the best attitude. Is he a coach with the Padres now?
I believe he was. I don't know if he's still there, but it was like Rod Barajas. Who else caught me? Raul Chavez. Wow, that's a...
He caught you 12 times.
Yeah. Hey, that guy, he wanted to show off his arm all the time. It was kind of funny. Like, he was like, Doc Halliday would...
Let the man throw the ball around.
Hey, but Doc Halliday would get pissed, though. Like, he caught him a few times where, again, Halliday was a guy that hit every spot, but, like, where he wanted to throw out the runner so bad that he'd get up so quick and he wouldn't get the strike call, and it would infuriate Doc. It was pretty funny, man.
That's funny. One guy, I'll ask you. So there's one guy that caught you once, and you threw a great game in Oakland.
Yan.
Do you remember?
Yan Gomes.
That's right. Yeah, you pitched a great, it looked like it was a great game with Yan Gomes back there. Again, who's a guy who's put together a really nice and long career as well.
Yeah.
Which Blue Jays fans, a bit of a one that got away. Although I think Blue Jays fans would have been happy to have Russell Martin back there in the aftermath of the Yan Gomes trade. So interesting, really interesting. Real quick. Oh, sorry. Was there something else you were going to mention? No.
Michael Barrett. No.
Oh my God, Michael Barrett. That,
wow.
Now my debut. We're remembering some guys.
Yeah, Michael Barrett, Raul Chavez, Rod Barajas, John Buck, Jose Molina, JP, Jose Molina, Jeff Mathis.
That's right, Jeff Mathis, who again made a career as being like the insanely long career as a great defensive catcher. There's one more. And there's one more you forgot. There's two more. There's two more you forgot. And one I'm really surprised about. And the other one I'm not as surprised.
Oh.
One guy, it was just two starts. Two, I think, shorter starts.
Oh, man. I'm drawing blank.
Your Vitor Yaldo?
Oh. Yeah. And who else?
The other one is a buddy of yours. He only caught you for one inning.
Josh Tolley.
Yeah.
Ah.
One inning.
Yeah. That's right.
I wouldn't have expected that. Anyway, remembering some guys with Ricky Romero. I'm surprised it took this long for this to become the Remember Some Guys show.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
One other thing we should talk about, though, Jose Berríos, who looked much, 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 much better yesterday. In the matinee, well, Wednesday against Oakland, looked like his old self. You know, kind of got. I wouldn't say like a quick hook. It was really quite an entertaining game. You know, close and well pitched, but just a lot of encouraging signs from Berríos. Really able to do the things that he needs to do to make him good. I'm very much. You know, I heard like Ben and Arden on the broadcast talking about how effective his curveball was. But for me, the thing is still the fastball. It's still his ability to command the fastball, put it in spots where they can't, you know, where it doesn't get hit hard, where he's then able to get to his curveball. Cause that is always for me going to be the thing for him. I saw him miss a couple, but even some of the ones that he missed, again, I mentioned Nick Allen. He threw, you know, a really good two seamer that was like up and in that even if it was still got a little bit too much plate, like that was Nick Allen's not doing anything with that pitch. So I don't know. I was really encouraged by what I saw from Berríos yesterday.
Yeah. So was I. And it's funny because I took a little bit of notes on him. I'm actually going to be on the broadcast today, pre and post game. So make sure you catch us on Blue Jay Central.
There you tonight. Go.
And I was actually watching a little bit of Berríos and you hit it right on the money. His fastball command. That's the foundation of everything. And people forget about that sometimes because we talked about his curveball. It was harder. It was sharper. It had nasty late movement, but it all starts with fastball control. And if he has that good fastball and he's got that good sinker too, it just sets up everything else. And even, you know, his changeup at times looked pretty good too. I know, I feel like it's a pitch that he doesn't use as much. But I feel like if he committed to it a little bit more and he actually threw it and not guided it, he'd be a lot better with it. And my friend, Drew, I went through Baseball Savant for like the first time ever. I've never really been on that website. Holy shit, it blew my mind, like all the stuff that's in there.
There's so much stuff in there.
Oh my, it's like almost overwhelming. And just because I wanted to see like his stuff from like this game to the game before and the game before that one in Milwaukee. And the numbers, I'm gonna talk numbers now. The numbers and just velocity, it just showed told me that yesterday was the hardest he's thrown his curveball, 84, 81, and with an average of 82, which is one of his in the past three outings, it's been like his most, his highest MPH is on it. And I was, you know, I'm wondering what adjustment he made. And by just watching the highlights, it's just, again, it was, it's like he was committed to it. He was like going to throw the shit out of it. And when you do that with those pitches, it's night and day. And I talk a lot about guiding your changeup, guiding your curveball. You start casting it, you start kind of trying to manipulate the movement. Well, that's the wrong thing to do. But when you commit to it and you actually say, here you go, it's like a big F you, I'm coming at you, whack. You get a sharper bite. And it seemed like yesterday he was getting those sharp bites on those curveballs.
Interesting to me. So you started mentioning his changeup, and I went and checked it out because to me it seems like you said he doesn't use it a lot. And I thought, okay, maybe does he only throw it to lefties, which, you know, is pretty common. Maybe I'm dating myself, and maybe that's more of an old school thing. Like you only throw it to the other side, or, you know, the good platoon guys. But I mentioned it. It was the changeup was the, oh God, it was like peak Jose Berríos in 2022. He gets ahead 0-2 on Ramon Laureano, like, you know, pitching really well, pitching a shutout. And then he throws just a terrible, awful, like right down the middle, and Laureano hits it out. Laureano, I don't remember him being such a good hitter, but
jeez,
he's playing so well, it's like he doesn't want to be in Oakland anymore. He's putting himself in somebody else's outfield with all this play. But just disappointing to see, you know, again, the kind of the one mistake that Berríos made. I wonder if we'll see him maybe hopefully go back, because he did throw a few more changeups to righties than typically he does, and a few fewer to lefties. So.
And maybe that 0-2 pitch is something that he, that's not maybe the right situation for a pitch that's not really your strikeout pitch. Mm-hmm. And you know, me personally, I'd put, if my curveball is working, I'm, hey, 0-2, boom, here you go. I'm not giving you a shot. Mm-hmm. And just a little bit off topic, Ramon Laureano has the best nickname in baseball.
Razor Ramon? Oh my God. How good is that?
Laser Ramon?
Oh, Laser Ramon, right. It's even better because he's got such a great arm too, of course. Yeah. I don't know. I think my pick for the best nickname is still, I think Luis Robert has the best nickname, La Pantera. That is like the best nickname.
That's pretty so dope cool. too. Yeah, it is. It is.
But anyway, yeah, the changeup, I mean, maybe with a bigger lead, I'm more understanding to be like, okay, you got some wiggle room. Let's see. Like, oh, he looks like he's cheating to get to the fastball. I bet we can slip a changeup underneath his bat. But
talking about veteran catchers, this is what a veteran catcher I feel like would do. Like a Danny Jansen. I don't think he's calling an 0-2 changeup. Again, it's his third best pitch. And again, 0-2 just doesn't seem the right situation unless he's committed to it and he's going to throw the shit out of it. Because as soon as you guide it, which he did, and it just kind of tumbled down the middle of the plate, and he paid for it.
The bullpen looks like it's going to, speaking of Danny, we mentioned Danny Jansen coming back. The bullpen could be getting some reinforcements in the form of Jimmy Garcia, who I believe, I'm not sure if he's with the team now, but could, who made his first rehab appearance with Buffalo. We saw Adam Simber go two innings yesterday, which is a lifesaver. I mean, Adam Simber has like a rubber arm, and the Blue Jays are absolutely benefiting from his rubber arm. I mean, he's had a couple rocky outings here and there, but at the same time, just been a real huge presence back there. He's leading the league. He's made 38 appearances already.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
No, he's been solid, man. And again, when you have a guy that's reliable like that, shoot, the Giants used the shit out of Taylor. Is it Taylor Rogers or is that the brother?
There's T. Rogers, the one that I was watching the Giants the other day, and you see Simber and it's like, oh, that's a submarine. Then you're like, you see Rogers, you're like, oh, right, that's submariner.
Yeah, and those guys, I feel like, can throw forever, and they can throw every single day. And again, you're right. The Blue Jays have benefited from Tyler Rogers. My bad. His brother's Taylor.
Taylor. Yeah. T. Rogers.
Yeah. I should know Tyler because I played with him in the minor league. So.
Oh, okay. There you go. You played in San Jose, right? Is that where you guys played together?
We played in Sacramento together.
Sacramento. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And no, but going back to Adam Simber, he's been solid, man. And a guy that comes in and attacks his own. Again, he's going to come right at you and he gets out. And he's doing it at a very high rate. And when you have a guy like that, you don't hesitate. And Charlie hasn't hesitated to go out there and bring him in right away. And to be able to go two innings again yesterday, it helps the bullpen. It helps everyone. And it just shows the trust that they have in him right now. And if he has the hot hand, this is a team that needs the hot hand. And they're going to ride him. So hopefully Simber continues his hot streak and he's able to give the team outs and that bullpen outs because this is what they need. I don't care how they get it. I don't care if he's not throwing 100. Who cares? At this point, just give me outs.
He had a bad outing in Chicago. Which again is he's a human being. He's allowed to. But since then, he's pitched a ton. Right in the last maybe 2 weeks, pitched six times. Pitched twice, like 3 days in a row, basically, at the end of June. He's been insanely efficient. He only threw 20 pitches yesterday, going two innings. He pitched, last week against Boston, he pitched innings through six pitches. You know, in Milwaukee, he got a couple outs, only threw six pitches. So, you know, we talk about Bunny having a rubber arm, but he's also just being so efficient and just getting those outs and just couldn't come at a better time for the way that the Blue Jays bullpen is right now.
And sometimes we tend to make this game so difficult on us as pitchers. And the key word you mentioned there, Drew, is efficient. When you're efficient in this game, lots of things are going to go well for you. And we tend, we talked about this guy, Kikuchi, earlier, and how he's not efficient and he's nibbling around and stuff like that. If he was efficient with his pitches and said, here you go, hit it, especially in Oakland, man, at night. Here you go. Like, you'd find yourself a lot deeper in games than you think of. And you'd look back and you'd be like, damn, I'm in the sixth inning. I'm in the seventh inning and I'm cruising right now because I'm being efficient. Again, easier said than done. But when you're efficient, Adam Simber doesn't have overpowering stuff, but he's going to go out there and attack you. It makes the world of difference.
Well, Adam Simber can only be so aggressive. He's throwing like 84 miles an hour. Again, looking ahead real quick, we'll look ahead to the Mariners series. Mariners are playing some pretty good baseball. They have themselves a certified superstar in center field in Julio Rodriguez. And they're just finally playing some better ball. Robbie Ray's pitching well. And Logan Gilbert, of course, having a good year. You know, is there anything about Seattle that kind of jumps off the page to you? Is there anything on Seattle that you're kind of watching other than Julio?
Well, yeah, they've been hot lately. Mm-hmm, so you're facing a team that is not so hot right now. So it'll be interesting how the Blue Jays get up for these games, and they better get up because again, it's going to be packed with Blue Jay fans, and it's a complete 180 of what it was in Oakland. So to me, if anything, you're going to feel the energy as soon as these guys walk out of that clubhouse for batting practice and feed off of that. And Seattle obviously is going to bring it, man. They're young, they're talented. There were a team last year that missed the playoffs by not much either. I'm excited to see the J-Rod show against this staff, and it's going to be a fun series. It's going to be a fun four games. I feel like it's going to be a lot of adrenaline rush from the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't think they know what they're in for. The younger guys that have never experienced this. And let me tell you, it's amazing when you walk out there and the only road stadium that you feel like you're playing at home, and no other team can say that or do that because I think the biggest thing is you don't realize what the Jays mean not only to Toronto but to the whole country of Canada, and I think these guys are in for a treat. I'm looking forward to see how they handle Marco Gonzalez tonight because he's a guy that's not overpowering, but he can spot the shit out of his fastball, and he loves that little changeup down and away. I was watching film on him earlier today, and it'll be interesting because he's a guy. He'll raise your eye level, he'll make you look down, and then he'll like buzz you in, bring it back up, and then throw that changeup down and away. So I'll be interested how these hitters react to that, and what adjustments they're trying to make. Because again, this offense is not hot right now, and you hope they break out of it.
Also, former Blue Jay Ken Giles is who, after his injury, signed a 2-year deal with Seattle. Well, last year of which he was recovering from his Tommy John surgery. Now he's back. He's throwing well. In a way, it's a shame that Seattle's playing well again, because I would have loved to see Ken Giles back in a Blue Jays uniform. But but here we are. Yeah, Seattle. I like what they did in that. Like they had a good year last year, but I think they realized that there was a little bit of smoke and mirrors in what they had done, and they didn't just say, well, we're going to bring back the same group and be ready to go. They definitely went out and tried to consolidate, improve the roster. And have done so. And there's a guy in Seattle's system that I love, Kyle Lewis. Man, he is such a good player. He's really struggled with injuries, though. I think he's lost his job in center field to Julio Rodriguez, but no shame in that. So maybe maybe if I'm Ross, I mean, I don't think that's ever going to happen. He's too good to be like, oh, we'll take him off your hands. We'll release you of this burden of Kyle Lewis. But it'll be a lot of fun. It's always.
No, yeah, it is going to be a lot of fun, and you almost wish they had Ty France. I just like seeing a full healthy team against a full healthy team.
And, yeah, I get that.
And that's just, for me, makes up for good baseball, and we get to say hi to our old friend Ryan Borecki too, so he's been doing pretty good.
Oh, of course, Ryan Borecki. Yeah, how could I forget? Ryan Borecki's, again, a guy you hope, and Sergio Romo, former Mariner, back in the mix. Sergio Romo, shut up. He's done the job since coming to Toronto, that's for sure.
Efficient.
Yeah, 2 1/3. Three strikeouts and a walk. I don't think he's even given up a hit yet. Look at you, yep. Sergio Romo. It's the Romero bump. He knows he like you has now become an honorary Canadian. So he's doing his thing here with the Blue Jays. So as Ricky said, he's going to be on the broadcast tonight, pre and post. So check him out with Jamie Campbell. And enjoy what is. Oh, and if you're on the West Coast listening, I hope if you're able to make it down, get out of the rain. I guess it's rained like every day out there for 3 weeks or something like that. They got the atmospheric river situation going on, better than the heat dome from last year. But if you're out west, enjoy the series. If you're here, watch something that's a bit of a unique situation, as you described, where you're the home team in the visiting ballpark. But everybody having a good time. Other than Mariners fans who truly, truly loathe this weekend. They hate it. It's their least favorite weekend of the whole
they
year.
They do.
All the season ticket holders and stuff, they're like, how are we letting this happen? And then, but, you know what I say to that? I say, hey, come back in time with me when the Blue Jays would sell tickets to people in Boston and New York before you could get single tickets in Toronto.
Yeah.
When it was just full of Red Sox and Yankees fans back in the day.
But enjoy it, Seattle, because this is one of the few times you probably sell out a stadium.
Yikes. Shots fired. Ricky Romero. Takedown. You heard it here first. His name is Ricky. My name is Drew. I hope you enjoy the series. We will be back with more Spin Rate next week.